Hello, and welcome to the Shipping and Handling Book Club. Yay. I'm your host, Jennifer Edden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
So today we will be talking about the first volume chronologically, fourth volume publishly.
Narnia problem.
in Lois McMaster-Bujold's Vorkosigan Saga, Falling Free.
Yay.
So, what did you feel about this book? Should we talk about the plot at all, a little bit? Just in case anyone wants to,
sure, we can
hear our voice,
summarize
even though they haven't read
it a little bit. Basically, it's a space opera, military, science fiction. It's a space book.
It's a book in space.
In which an engineer is sent off to this posting for his company way out in the middle of nowhere. And so basically he's there to train employees in various welding techniques.
He's an engineer.
Yes, I said that. God, Jen, don't you pay any attention to me?
I do. I was just reiterating because
okay.
It's a big plot point.
Yes.
He makes a lot of engineering jokes, but I just did not get.
Fortunately...
Sorry, I wasn't trying to mansplain or ladiesplain the plot of this book to you.
Well, since both my father and my sister are engineers, I am used to not getting engineering jokes.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
But so he arrives at this place, and it turns out that his students, in place of legs, have arms. They have been genetically engineered to have four arms because they're in space. They don't need legs.
There's no artificial gravity.
Yeah.
You know.
Second set of arms, way more useful, which, you know, makes a lot of sense.
So you said that you had read this in ebook.
Yes.
So you did not have the amazingness of this cover to look forward to. So I have the mass market edition, and I just, even though, you know, it's genetically engineered and it's like, you know, it's a weird mental image. Like, look at this woman's legs. / arms / second, like,
this is legitimately something that no matter how you depict it, it looks mildly horrifying.
I still think that this not just horrifying, but just sort of like badly conceived.
Yes,
this particular cover. But so there are the Quaddies, they're called.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've been raised by this company, and they're sort of treated sort of half like children, half like adults.
Yeah.
But
well, they're pretty much all under 18,
right?
So the grown ups here, the oldest of the Quaddies, are still teenagers.
Yeah, which kind of creepy, but
yep,
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Yeah.
And then, you know, predictably, if you have someone talking about, you know, property at the beginning of the book, someone is going to try and destroy that property by the end of the book. So the bulk of the book is Leo, the main character, sort of coming to terms with his role in this whole system,
mm-hmm,
and then trying to figure out what to do with the Quaddies.
Yes. And various developments occur. I don't know why I'm pitching this as though, you know, you haven't also read the book.
Well, I mean, you know, hopefully you have. I mean, so commence spoilers, I guess.
Yes.
You know, he discovers the plot to sort of not even that's the other thing about this. Like, there's not even a plot to kill them. It's just to sort of like render them useless by sending them to Earth's surface.
Yeah.
Not even to Earth, just to the planet that they're orbiting. So he's like, that's terrible. Let's steal the whole place and go somewhere. And they do.
It's also, you know, it does deal with some very interesting questions in terms of they're functionally slaves.
Yeah.
They, you know, they're treated very well and educated and cared for and everything. But, you know, they don't have any control over their lives
or their own bodies, which becomes a very creepy plot point. And you know, there's a very kind of like, you know, there's like some sexual politics that are just like really disgusting, that you know perpetrated sort of by the quote-unquote grown-ups on you know, on the Quaddies. But like, it's an interesting, it's almost, when I was reading it, I was sort of like, you know, this is like the nightmare of capitalism in space. Because there's a lot of sort of like bottom line talk and like, you know, this is an investment of millions of dollars. And, you know, the thing that that you know, sort of makes it so that these people are going to, you know, have to quote unquote be remaindered is that someone has developed an artificial gravity device.
Yeah.
And even though it's expensive, it's still, you know, preferable than having like an entire sort of like.
Yeah, the entire point of the Quaddies is that they are a species designed for zero gravity. And so if you're suddenly going to put artificial gravity on all space ships, stations, I guess, they are no longer useful and, in fact, are going to be inconvenienced by this.
Yeah.
It'll be just as bad for them as being down on the planet's surface.
Yeah.
Where basically they crawl around like crabs.
Yeah, because it can't actually like support their own weight on arms.
Yeah, much like we find it very difficult to walk on our hands for extended periods of time.
Unless you're one of those bozos who does CrossFit. It's like, look at my handstand. Look at my handstand, bro. Bro, handstand. Handstand, bro.
Yes. I'm like, I'm sorry, are you an 8-year-old girl? Because I was also like that when I was an 8-year-old girl.
So I guess, you know, one of the things that sort of strikes me about our conversation so far is the tone of sort of dismissiveness with which we are discussing the plot of this book.
Yes.
Did you enjoy this book?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. It's extremely linear, which I actually found sort of bizarre to read.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a thing happens, and then based on that, another thing happens, and then based on that, another thing happens. It's extremely straightforward, and I found this actually quite engaging. Mm-hmm. As a result of that, I think Leo is a really compelling character. I found the Quaddies endearing. They all feel very much like children, but as such, they're you know, it's kind of like, oh no, child, bad things can't happen to you. It's not okay.
Yeah, it was very sort of like save the dog. I was getting real worried for Tony there. I was like, leave Tony down on Rodeo and like take off into space. I was so worried.
Yeah.
Like the fact that whole escape even worked.
I know.
Was sort of the least plausible part of the entire book.
I was like, nothing actually went wrong there. Yeah. This is very much what people talk about when they say science fiction is competence porn. A problem arises, we are going to solve it, and you're going to see how we do it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, when done well, is really interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that one of the smartest things that is working in this book is that Leo isn't sure of himself at all.
No.
But he never gets sort of like whiny about it. Like he's never 100% sure that like this is gonna work.
Mm-hmm.
And even when he's sort of proposing like insane solutions to things, he's sort of like, well, we'll see. We gotta try.
Yeah. Which is part of why it's really easy to get invested in him and in what he's trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is because he's full of doubts, but he's also like, well, we've gotta do something, so we're gonna do this.
Yeah.
And he's a problem solver, and that's an appealing characteristic. Yeah.
I liked him better as the book went on, because I felt like he developed kind of a sense of humor there's some jokes he made later on that I think I actually bookmarked. Did I bookmark one of them? I think I bookmarked two of them. When he says, well, that's not really a joke, it's just kind of a funny saying. It's an ancient and honorable term for the final step in any engineering project. Turn it on, see if it smokes. I just found that kind of endearing.
Yep.
You know, I haven't really decided if I like it yet because I was very anxious the entire time. And, you know, it was page-turny in the same way that The Martian is page-turny.
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess I should say The Martian is page-turny in the same way that Falling Free is page-turny since it came later. But somehow I cared less about Mark Watney.
Okay.
So I was less anxious when I was reading it, but I was super anxious when I was reading this.
Yeah.
Like, I had to sort of put it down and kind of, like, hyperventilate a little bit. Because something about the combination of sort of, like, the vaguely infantilized way that everyone talks to the Quaddies.
And their extreme naivete.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Like, just ridiculous. And, which you know, it completely believable in the context of the story. But, like,
they were born on this space station. They never left it. And everyone who's seen them has been carefully controlled.
Yeah.
They have no experience outside this tiny little world of 3,000 people.
And I think that the only plot point that I was just like, no, was the fact that Leo and one of the like teenage quaddies like get together.
Yeah, I was also just like, no,
gross. Like this is not cool. And it sort of comes out of nowhere. And like she's definitely like sort of the most mature, but she's also been like sexually exploited by like multiple. Yes. Legged having people, you know, like it was just, I was just like, But I, you know, the thing that I think I liked the best about it was the sort of bureaucrats figuring out how to sort of get around. Like, there's this wonderful, that wonderful scene at the end where Bruce is trying to like fire, and then Benergy is like, you know, do you have a work order for this? Because technically it could be an expenditure of waste products. And you need to have this other person's approval.
That was so great.
Oh my God, it was wonderful. And just like the careful managing of like, and he's like, oh my God, these women just keep fucking it up for me. And they're just like, I don't know what you're talking about.
No.
Do you just need to calm down? Maybe you need a nap.
it
was so wonderful.
Great. Yeah, and it's, I even particularly enjoyed how linear the plot was because of that.
Like, yeah.
It's just, yeah. You sort of get to a point where they're all sort of like, oh no, I definitely am not interfering in your plans. Definitely not.
Definitely not. We are behind you.
Yes.
Way behind you. Sealing the door behind you. But yeah, I mean, I think the other thing that didn't quite work with me is all the sort of technical description, which I don't necessarily think added a whole lot to my experience of the world. It just sort of, I mean, it never felt sort of like splainy, but like I did skim it because I was just like, okay, now he's teaching someone how to weld.
Yes.
For like 3 pages.
I did find that engaging, especially because, okay, one of my favorite parts in the book is towards the end when they've stolen this wormhole jumper ship. And they're like making these adjustments so that they can attach their habitat onto it and jump through the wormhole. And they crack one of the vital parts, the mirror. And so he's basically like, okay, so, this ship is not going to function without this mirror. I guess we have to figure out how to make it a new one. And so I found it really cool that they made a sphere and then flattened it by dragging the spaceship around it. I found that really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that part was really cool, but like, there was so much of that kind of, there were so many cool solutions to problems that I was just like,
too many,
but I did enjoy that. But then like some of the sort of solutions to problems came sort of like off screen. Like you don't see Leo decide to pull that like atmosphere trick to get everyone into the lecture module.
Oh, yeah.
It just happens and you're just like, yes, it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah. That was, and it was just like,
oh my God, in that moment that Bruce is like, yeah, sweet, he's going to kill all the Quaddies. And then he's like, oh no, I made a terrible mistake. He's like, what is, he has that like plaintive cry at the end where he's like, they're going away.
Yeah, she
got out.
She spends much, I suppose it's actually, I think of this book as taking place largely from Leo's perspective, but I guess that's not entirely true. Mm-hmm. We actually get quite a bit of other people.
Yeah.
And I think it works really well, partly because, you know, they are all in different places and we need to see what's happening there. Like the first time when Tony and Claire,
yeah.
I'm really bad at remembering character names. It's really terrible.
I recently re-listened to the podcast we did where we talked about Jurassic World and how we just called Sam Neill's character Sam Neill the entire podcast. Like an hour and a half, we never name his character. So I feel like you're probably in good company.
I actually frequently have this problem when I am preparing to talk to authors about their manuscripts. Where I'm like, okay, I can talk all about these different plot points, all these different themes, these things that I would like you to explore a little bit more. Cannot remember your main character's name.
What's her face? Really shines.
She's
in that
so great. I really love her.
Definitely been there. Definitely done that. I actually sometimes write notes of what their names are. Before I have the call.
Before I have the call, I open the manuscript and go, okay, what's this character's name? I have the query right there. Yeah. So Tony and Claire go down, try to escape.
Oh my God, that whole scene. I was just like, why are you doing this? You sweet baby doofuses. No.
No. This at the end of it, when the security guy, Banerjee, I guess, all they will tell him is that it's their experimental subjects, and you'll know them when you see them. And so he's completely freaked out. He's expecting like monsters. So he brings a gun with him rather than a stunner, and fires instinctively when he sees movement and he
shoots Tony
out. Like, they're just kids. They're just kids.
And then at the end, he's like, is one of them that girl with the baby that I shot at earlier in the book?
That thing that I super regret doing.
Yeah. And then he was like, you know,
maybe I'm on her side.
Yeah, well, that's that scene where they're like torturing Tony, and oh, Ty's like, so how long of a jumper pilot situation do I have? Like, how much do you need, you know? But, yeah, I still haven't really quite decided. I mean, I am very intrigued by the world, though, and I'm interested to see where it goes. Because, like, in all of my reading about the series, I sort of got a very different feel for, like, the way people talk to me. I definitely did not, like, corporations were definitely not a part of, like, how I thought of
Well, this one takes place several hundred years.
Oh, yeah. Before. No, definitely. Okay. So it's a very different sort of vibe from what I was expecting. But I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah,
it's like, are we going to follow the Quaddies into space?
One of the things I really enjoyed about it is how carefully and thoroughly she has thought out how zero gravity works.
Oh, yeah.
Just from the very design of the Quaddies to the way that they function, to the fact that they do not conceive of up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that things are designed in the space station. And I found it so interesting.
Yeah.
And it's you can tell she really did her research and then also really just sat down and thought about it a lot. Like, what would this be like?
Yeah.
And it was so cool.
I was actually just Googling because it reminded me of the first time I read Ender's Game.
Mm. The enemy's gate is down?
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to see when it was published. I guess Ender's Game was 85, but yeah, I mean, that the sort of spatial conceptions and, you know, down to the ideas of, like, you know, the things you do in zero gravity to, like, keep shape.
Oh,
like a
yep.
treadmill. You know? Like, that was awesome.
Yep.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of those ideas, you know, they exist today. Like, there is a treadmill on the...
Yep.
There was a guy who actually ran the London Marathon in space.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool.
One of the astronauts was like, I'm going to run the marathon in space.
I have to say, the outreach that the astronauts on the ISS do was just so fun.
Oh my God, I love that you can tweet from space.
Right?
Like, it just makes
That's
me
so cool.
It makes me so happy. And, like, you know, as much as I think that, like, sort of these private space endeavors are cool, like, I also find them kind of sinister in that, like, there aren't people tweeting about them other than, like, from the outside.
Yeah.
Because it's all sort of, like, patented and stuff. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just not following the right, you know, Twitter feeds, but
Also, I was absolutely delighted recently to find out that one of NASA's newest class of astronauts, which, by the way, is the first one that's 50% female.
Yes.
So they've got 4 men and 4 women, and one of the women is a marine biologist who has now become an astronaut. And I'm like, so you mean that my dreams when I was 9 could come true?
I think it's a little late for you now.
I thought those were incompatible.
I think it's a little late for you now, but...
it's a little late for me
but
now.
She's living the dream.
She is living the dream.
I also love that one astronaut who, like, you know, people take the pictures of, like, their families in their space in the spacesuits.
Yeah.
It's his dogs.
Oh, yes!
They're just, like, licking his face. Like, oh, my God. This is so dear. Okay, so back to the book. I'm trying to think of what else I really liked about this. I thought that, you know,
So we have a question from my client, Tracy Townsend.
I think she just asked you.
No, she asked the podcast.
Oh, yeah, I don't have that on my phone.
I just favorited it.
Oh, good.
Read
it.
So she asked a question it's Tracy Townsend at the Storymatic. And so she asked, what did you think of LMB's use of female characters as agents of plot and allies to each other? Jen has thoughts about this.
I have thoughts. I don't think that they were necessarily agents of plot. I think that they were reacting to plot. I mean, the only time that I felt like a character, like a female character, actually, at least the Quaddies, I'm specifically thinking about the Quaddies, actively did something instead of sort of reacted to another situation is when Claire like blinded that technician who was trying to like sterilize her, where she was like, well, what do I do? And then she was like, oh, I can fuck your shit up. And then when Silver shot, you know, burned that guy, you know, that was another thing. But like, I don't necessarily know that I would say that they were like, I think that, I don't know, I have a lot of feelings that I haven't quite thought through. But I did like the way that there was this sort of, like, sisterhood, for lack of a better word.
And the scene where they've realized that they're trying to sterilize the Quaddies. And so some of the girls go and start hiding in their, like, secret little cabin space. And they're watching out for each other. That was, I liked that a lot. I think also, I mean, the fact that, I guess this is Claire and Tony working in concert, when they decided to run away.
Because
Claire was told she was scheduled to have another baby with another guy. She's like, not having this. This
nope.
is terrible.
Nope.
And so they decide to run away, and that, it does, I think that sets a lot of the plot in motion. I think that it's complicated by the fact that a huge part of what creates urgency in the plot is the invention of the artificial gravity, because that has nothing to do with any of these characters. It's something that they sort of hear about from outside. And so that has that puts pressure on everything to happen a lot sooner.
Yeah.
Because that is what means they they have to start phasing out the Quaddies right away, rather than trying to, like, they don't have any time.
Like, it's an iPod model.
Yes.
It's just like, you know, they're going to stop making.
Right. We don't need you anymore. You can.
Well, and I think that I would feel confident using, you know, calling the female characters agents of plot if the whole thing, you know, weren't, you know, largely from Leo's point of view.
Yes.
Because even, like, when we get Dr. Ye's perspective, because I think we do get hers, like, once, right?
Maybe? I think so.
I think we get hers, like, once. But, I mean, regardless, we get Claire's, we get Silver's.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I think that might be it. I think it might be just Claire and Silver.
That might be. We get a lot of both of them, though.
But I feel like they're just sort of, like, dealing with the things that Leo kind of, like, throws at them. In some ways, like, you know, he's the one who sort of, like, gets this knowledge, and then he's the one who decides.
It is very much his plan.
It's his plan, and they're kind of going along with it. And I think that I don't really know. And I think that so much of it, this sort of ties into something that I wrote down some notes about this. Actually, like, it's like three sentences.
Useful.
So one of the things I thought about towards the end of the book, which I really liked, is that it becomes very clear sort of the limits of Leo's experience, because he was like, why would I need a doctor on this fucking tank full of teenagers?
And, like, babies.
Why would I need someone to handle childcare? Like, why would I need that?
The 18-year-olds can deal with that, right?
The 18-year-olds can deal with that. And I was just like, you know, okay, bro,
Leo.
So that struck me as very interesting, considering that the female characters were very much sort of tools in the rest of the book. I don't know.
I guess at that point, Mama Nilla becomes hugely influential, just as one of the people who refuses to leave.
Yeah.
So she and the other doctor, when they stay on board, and we're like, it's, you didn't think this through, guy.
Bro.
It's like, we're on your side here, and we're telling you, you've made a terrible decision.
Well, I guess what I sort of, and maybe I'm just sort of reading this sort of too late, because it was published 3 years after I was born. But, you know, the fact that all of the concern for the female characters seems to be tied up in sort of traditional lady stuff, like having kids and, you know, relationships and, like, breastfeeding. Like, there's that weird moment at the end where, like, Mama Nilla is just like, no one wants me, so I guess I'll stay. Like, And I was just like, oh my God, like, where did this come from? Like, I don't know. And like, you know, Claire is concerned that she's going to be paired to someone else. I mean, not that those aren't like valid concerns, but like, you know, Tony gets to be a welder and Claire gets to like tend the flowers, you know?
Yeah.
I guess that's sort of what I was struggling with as well.
I think Claire definitely does have this very sort of traditional femininity about her where she's, you know, working on the hydroponics and raising a child. And she's the only one we see who actually does have a child. They say that there are more, but we never see them. I guess I think that Silver is very, very different from Claire, both in her outlook and in the way that she deals with things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that I think she mitigates that problem a lot. It's definitely also complicated by the fact that she is, you know, the one who is sort of sexually manipulated. I couldn't figure out how to use that. She is definitely, but then she... It seems like she...
With Ty, I think it's, like, sort of her choice, but, like...
Yeah, that's definitely a relationship that they both enjoy, but, like...
Well,
yeah.
I don't necessarily know that she enjoys it, because there was that entire first horrible, creepy sex scene where she was just like, I'll just imitate these noises that I think he likes. And, you know, this is what the creepy director wants me to do, so I'll do that here. And, you know, these sort of, like, lies she's been fed about, like, you know, what the sexual needs of downsiders. And she's like, ah. So.
Yeah, that was definitely creepy. I'm very glad we did not have to see her actually have sex with
Vanetta.
Yeah, that guy.
Guy's the worst.
The worst guy.
I'm actually super bummed that we don't get to see him fired. Like, I was just really hoping that admin would just be like, you're fucking fired, Bruce. You're fired.
You mishandled every single aspect of the situation.
You done goofed, Bruce. Get the fuck out.
You didn't do a thing right, so...
Yeah. I think, too, you know, one of the things that strikes me is, you know, so when Silver comes up with the solution to the jumper captain problem where she's like, well, we'll just give you the ship. Like, we see her have this, like, cool, like, leap of logic from, like, Leo's perspective. And I think that that sort of, you know, changes the way that...
That we see it. I do think that... I think that that is one of those moments that would not be particularly compelling from Silver's perspective because it seems like it's just... It's like, oh, he wants something out of this. We have something for him.
Yeah.
Tradesies.
Oh, God, I would have given anything if this book said tradesies or something. But, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm just...
I think that the one thing I will say about that is I think that when we see it from Leo's perspective, it comes across as brilliance, where if we had seen it from her perspective, it would have come across as obvious.
But then I think that what we don't have enough of is sort of a sense of the Quaddies, like, getting a sense of their own power.
I agree with that.
Of till the end, towards the end, but, like, having Silver sort of, like, come to that conclusion and, like, seeing the reaction from Leo, I think would have been really interesting, because then that also would have validated a lot of my feeling, you know, a lot of that relationship later.
Yeah.
Because, like, he sort of is looking a lot at her admiringly at that point, but, like, you don't have any kind of sense of what her feeling towards him are.
Yes, I agree with that. And it's especially because he's like 20 years older than she is.
Oh my God. Ugh.
And in a very obvious position of power, that she tries to make it seem like an equitable relationship, but it doesn't quite work.
Yeah. So we're coming up on the... 30 minute mark. Let's take to the interwebs and see if anyone has any feelings about. So we're checking Tumblr. Come on, commuter. If anyone spoils me for Civil War, I'll kill you. Okay, it's just questions. Let's check if anyone's used the hashtag SH Book Club.
And I think we mentioned this in the last, and when we recorded the thing too.
It's just me.
just Jen. And so, you know, it's been about 24 hours since we actually
posted that
episode, so it's fine. But we'd love for all of our listeners who are participating in this and reading these books to use the hashtag SH Book Club, just to talk to us about the books, to talk to each other about the books. We'd love this for this to sort of blossom on its own.
We'd like it to be interactive and not just us jawing. And
yeah, because it's hard to turn a podcast into a book club when it's just
us
talking to you.
Yeah.
talking at you.
Yes. Well, so shall we end there? So the next book is going to be, do you have any final thoughts?
I'm trying to think. I do kind of want to talk about, the name is completely gone, the Dr. M guy.
Minchenko.
His wife being a...
surprise awesome wife there at
yes,
the end.
Yes, she's amazing.
Oh my God, she like steals, so he's like, you know, I'll come with you, but like, I really need to take my wife with me because I love her. And so they like work out some kind of like, fucking, you know, rendezvous, and then she like steals a dirt bike and like comes. Yes. It's just like, it's like, I had to leave my harpsichord behind, Warren. Damn it!
But I brought my violin with me. And her, oh my God, the thing where, so this is a part you see from Silver's point of view, and you just see this like description that this look comes over her face, and she's like, oh man. I would love to see a quaddy in zero G with a 12-string guitar. I'm like, yes, that sounds awesome. And so she was a badass, and I really liked her. But it's also just she is a historian performer, I guess, where she just like plays instruments. She has learned how to and like performs on instruments that are no longer in use. So she's got a harpsichord, a violin, various other things that are non-electronic.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. It does, I mean, I know we're several centuries away from where this is, but where this book, or when this book takes place, but it is interesting how these styles of music to sort of demonstrates that they will still have
value,
but will not be in common use.
Yeah.
Sort of like the harpsichord now.
Well, people thought the harpsichord was done, and then Lin-Manuel Miranda was like, we need some more harpsichord up in the bitch. And now he's going to win a Tony.
The harpsichord is a super weird instrument, though, because you can't hear it.
Yeah.
You can hear it when it's perfectly designed for a tiny little room with like half a dozen people in it. But if you want to put on a concert with a harpsichord, you got to mic it.
Yeah, basically.
Which, you know, it is kind of just like a tiny piano. I played the harpsichord for a hot second. I was taking piano.
That is the most Bridget thing I've ever heard. I played the harpsichord in my youth.
Yes. I played piano for a few years, and, you know, I was learning Bach, and my instructor had a harpsichord, and was like, I'm going to put you on the harpsichord. It's like, okay. So, you know, I particularly liked Dr. Machenko's wife.
Yes, me too. Spinoff. Music lessons with Dr. Minchenko. Well, on that note, I think that's probably a good place to end. So the next book is going to be Falling Free, because we just finished that.
Yep. The next book, Shards of Honor.
The next book is going to be Shards of Honor. We are going to be recording probably an episode before we do the next book club to give everyone time to read it. But we are going to be recording that book club episode on June 13th.
Yes.
So, Shards of Honor, get it, read it, love it, or not, or hate it. Talk about your hate or love. Copiously using the hashtag SH Book Club on Twitter and Tumblr. We do ask that if you are going to, you know, ask us spoilery questions or, like, submit spoilery kind of, you know, thoughts, that you use the ask box so that they can be hidden from people who might just casually be scrolling through the tag.
Yes.
But thank you for everyone who's taking this weird little journey with us. And we will see you in June for Shards of Honor.